Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 36, recorded October 12th, 2010.
Hello, everybody! We're back!
Greetings.
We have some news about some of our fish for you.
Indeed. I had some young bristlenose plecos in our 55. They were second generation. I had a calico bristlenose male and an albino bristlenose female, and they produced a couple of batches or broods of babies, and I kept some of them. I traded in most of them, but I kept a few around, and I have probably three or four in that 55. And I figured, oh yes, I'm sure there are probably males and females in there, and sometime they'll breed. But they're only about 18 months old. And I was expecting it would take longer, but this past week, I noticed some fry in there. They have what they need in there to be able to breed. They have some caves, and that's the main requirement. They need some sort of cave-like structure to hide in, and yeah, I noticed it. But this is perhaps the most interesting thing about the whole business is that the calico crossed with the albino, because albino tends to be a recessive trait. You know, none of the young were albino from that first generation. I don't think any of the young were calico either, which leads me to believe that perhaps calico is similar, although I'm not certain about that, but is similarly a recessive trait. In the young, I've noticed at least two of them, and I'm not sure how many young there are yet. But I've only seen about maybe four or five in there at a time, but I think there are more than that. There are a lot of places to hide in there. At any rate, one of the young is an albino, and at least two of them are calicos, which is really fun, and I'll put a picture of some of those on the resources page so you can see it. It's just kind of fun to see, especially, it's always fun to be surprised by fry. And it was especially fun to see a little bit of Mendelian genetics going on. So there you go.
And also this week we had two calls, so we will be addressing those today. You want to tell us about our first one?
Well, our first one was from Anonymous, a different Anonymous from last time, and that's totally fine, you know, don't mind. And let's take a listen to that one actually right now.
Hey guys, I love your show. I was wondering if I am setting up a planted tank with an emphasis on mosses for my son. I was wondering if he'd be able to keep like Tanganyikan cichlids. I was thinking like Calvus and stuff like that. Any thoughts on it? I'm using a pleated filter and carbon for filtration. I'm still in the planting process, but if you can give me any help or instructions, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. Bye.
So, a 20-gallon Tanganyikan tank with Calvus, and the tank is going to be planted mostly with mosses. It's an interesting idea. Well, a couple of things that I would have to say. First of all, I need to admit I've never kept Calvus. I know they're Tanganyikan cichlids. I know there are a laterally compressed fish, so their body shape, they're tall in the sense from top of the dorsal fin to the bottom of their anal fin, for example. They're kind of tall that way, but they're a narrow fish, I guess you could say. Thin, yeah, and they're laterally compressed as opposed to dorsally flattened.
So like angelfish are laterally compressed as well?
They are, okay. Although calvus don't have fin development like angelfish at all, but they are that sort of general shape, I guess. They're also more elongate than angelfish too, and they're pretty fish. They're unusual looking fish. There are various color morphs and so on, and some of them are very dark, almost black with little spots on them and bars, and some of them are almost white, and there are various gradations in between and so on. And they're predators, and they tend to slip in between cracks in rocks, and that's why they have that shape. So they're not so much a cichlid that would chew plants up, I wouldn't think, based on that. So, in theory, moss should work. tank based on mosses. But
Maybe he could call back in after a few months and let us know
well,
how
let
it's
us know how it
going.
works. Yeah, one a couple of caveats I should give. Mosses, I well, Java mosses' ideal temperature range is like 75 or below, and Calvus temperature range, from what I have been able to gather, is around 77, somewhere around there. So the Java moss will not grow as quickly at 77 as it would at 75 or 74 or even 70. You get pretty low with the moss and it does really well, but you wouldn't want to get that low with the Calvus. So one idea would be to try to use some mosses that are used to warmer temperatures, like Singapore moss or maybe Taiwan moss. Try something like that. You could still do Java moss, it'll still grow. And there are people who report that their Java moss grows like crazy at 86 degrees, but in my opinion, I expect that a lot of times that's not true Java moss. It's something else that happens to be adapted to warmer temperature, or it might be a strain of Java moss that's adapted to warmer temperature. If you got something like that, go for that. But I would say experiment. I know Christmas moss would not be ideal at that temperature, because past about 74 degrees, Christmas moss starts to lose its shape. I'm gonna have to move. Sorry about if this makes noise, but the cat just sat in front of this, and he might be purring directly into it, and that might not work out.
Oh, that would be neat.
Well, it might be hard to hear. But as far as the Java moss surviving in the tank, I think that shouldn't be a problem, even though the hardness and pH are likely to be high in a Tanganyikan tank. I don't think that's going to bug the Java moss any. Of course, most moss responds well to CO2, dissolved CO2 added to the water, which you won't be able to do really in a Tanganyikan tank, because that would cause the pH to go too low. But the moss will still do fine. It just won't grow as fast as it would with CO2 injection. And of course, the moss in there will help reduce nitrates, which is especially good because Tanganyikans don't like really big water changes in general. So I guess the last thing I would say is that just because cichlids tend to be redecorators, once again, I don't have direct experience with Calvus, but I do with many other cichlids, and because they tend to redecorate their tanks quite a bit, I would say get the moss established first on whatever substrate you're going to put it on. Make sure it's firmly attached, growing on something, whether you do that in another tank and then introduce it to the Calvus tank, or you get the tank set up and put some other fish in there to cycle it that aren't going to bug the moss, and then switch those out and put the Calvus in once the moss is well entrenched in the substrate, meaning it's been rubber banded or tied to something like a piece of artificial driftwood or a rock or something like that. When I say substrate, I don't mean you want to plant it in fluorite or anything like that, of course. Once it's attached well, then the Calvus is less likely to have a chance to be able to rip it off, because you know how cichlids get. And yeah, good luck with that. Hopefully it was of use to our comments were of use to you, and let us know how it goes.
Thanks for calling in.
Indeed, we always appreciate it.
So we have our second caller.
Yeah, it's from Robert from Texas. Thanks for letting us know who you are, Robert. We don't mind anonymous calls, but we also like it when somebody lets us know who they are. So thank you. By the way, I love Texas. I've spent some summers there. That's where my grandmother used to live. So I have happy memories of Texas. The Denton, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, for those of you who might not be familiar with the small town of Denton. Anyway, nice area. All right, well, the questions, I guess we better listen to them. So let's listen to Robert's message.
Hello, Russ and Kelly. This is Robert from Texas. I was calling to see if you guys could talk about heaters. Which tanks need them? What kind of fish need them, particularly? The temperature to set them, and also what to do when disaster happens and your heater shorts out and turns your tank into fish soup. How to overcome that. And also, if you could possibly talk about other tank disasters and how to rescue them as well. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Goodbye.
We wanted to know about heaters and which fish need them and which fish don't. Now, this is
a large subject.
It is a large subject.
Heaters.
Yeah, we'll get to the other points that he mentioned as well, but I would say it's difficult to say in a nutshell which fish need them and which fish don't, because it depends a lot on the stability of the temperature in your home, and it depends on how the fish were raised, and it depends on lots of other things. But and just the ambient temperature in your home is going to make a difference. But I would say it's easier to say that most fish just plan on them needing a heater, and there are quite a few that actually don't. We can look at that. For example, goldfish. Most people will just sort of say, well, goldfish don't need a heater. But there are a lot of goldfish keepers who do use a heater, not because they need to be kept really warm, but because they don't want big temperature swings to bother the goldfish. So rather than have the temperature go from 60 to, you know, 78 during the course of a day or something like that, which would be a big switch to go through every day. I mean, I don't know where you'd do that unless we were in a building where they turn the heat off at night and they keep it on in the day. I don't know. But
it's possible if they've got the tank at work.
Work, office buildings or schools or something, that could happen. But a lot of people will keep it and get the heater, so you keep the temperature at 74, and goldfish might do better at 74 than, you know, all that flexibility. Or going from 74 to 78 might be easier on them than going from 60 to 78. So some people get a heater for that reason. We have had heaters with our goldfish on occasion. I know once, years ago, we had an outbreak of ick when we bought a new goldfish, so we put a heater in and turned the temperature up to get rid of the ick, and then after that we turned it off. But currently we don't have heaters with our goldfish, and that seems to suit them just fine, of course. But a lot of the fish we think of as tropical aren't really tropical, or they're adaptable enough that they don't need a heater. For example, we have bristlenose plecos with our goldfish. They're fine. I've kept common guppies for years and years and years without heaters, although it's good to remember that that does decrease the speed with which they breed, which can be positive, depending on how fast you want them to breed. A guppy kept at about 80 degrees might have babies every 2 weeks. If it's a female. If it's a male, it probably won't.
Probably. You gotta stick your probably in there.
Yeah. And if it's around 70, 72 degrees, it might take 16 weeks between broods of babies. So, you know,
it depends on how many guppies you want.
Yeah. Zebra danios do well as long as it doesn't get too cold. I mean, if it's above 65, they're fine. And most people keep their house above 65 most of the time. There are some other danios that would fit the bill too. I mean, leopard danios and so on. Actually, celestial pearl danios, if they're not kept too cold, do fine without a heater. They breed at cooler temperatures, and they won't breed when it gets too warm. So you're probably safe with those if it doesn't get, you know, below the high 60s. White cloud mountain minnows can be kept without heaters just fine. In fact, breed better. I remember in Hawaii, I had some neon tetras in my office tank and some white cloud mountain minnows in one of my tanks at home. And the neons were a little cool in my office because of the air conditioning. And I did get a heater, I think, eventually, but it was... They turned down the air conditioning. It was okay at first, and then they turned it down. And anyway, I decided to switch them. Talked to some others about it, and got some good ideas. And my neons started doing a lot better because I brought the neons home to our house where it was always above, you know, mid-70s, pretty much. And then brought the white clouds into my office, and the white clouds immediately started spawning. And they spawned up a whole bunch of babies immediately in that tank because it was cooler. There are some barbs that do just fine. Dojo loaches, which are great, funny fish. I love dojo loaches. They're like giant coolie loaches, which don't have the color patterns. And they're fun. They don't need a heater. The fathead or rosy red minnows don't need a heater. They're a native fish that lives in cool water. I've kept Pleiades. I had generations and generations of Pleiades in a paludarium once that didn't have a heater. But in general, most fish just say, if in doubt, use a heater. But there are other fish too. I mean, there are quite a few tetras that range down into areas of Argentina that are considered more temperate than tropical. So I would say do a little research on whatever species you're getting and find that out. But those are some of the more commonly kept fish that really don't need heaters. Let's give a little bit of discussion about brands and stuff. I've probably used more heater brands than I can possibly remember. But we can talk about some of them. And I don't receive any money from any of these companies to talk about this, and I'm just telling you from that standpoint. I am not saying any of these heaters are, necessarily my favorite or whatever, but I'll tell you what my experiences have been, and they're not necessarily representative of the products involved. Hopefully that covers things. Top Fin is a brand from a big box store that has been spotty. I have a couple of them that have been fine, and I've had others that run hot or get stuck at, 87 degrees, and I can't turn them down no matter what I do. So I would say not my favorite heater. One nice thing is you can bring it back to the store and they'll replace it. No questions asked, but that's how I've done
If
that
you
on
just get
occasion.
another spotty heater, though, that's not going to help you a whole lot.
Yeah, so not so good. Visitherm has been good. I had a Visitherm in a 55 that was a marvelous thing. It's easy to set because you set it right to the temperature you want it at, which is a more common feature nowadays than it used to be, but it was one of the first to do that, I think. One of the first that I had to set it to an actual temperature instead of just up or down, and then you had to use the thermometer to figure it out. But they're easy to see and easy to set, and it was very dependable, that one. Marineland Stealth are one of my favorite. They're very easy to set. They're not too visible, so they work well in an aquascape tank. The black kind of fades in behind plants and things like that. Most of mine have been really dependable in terms of temperature. I have had at least one of them that gave out, like just died. And then I have another one that's kind of goofy, temperature-wise. It runs a little warm, so you just have to, but you can turn it down and then it works okay. But the temperature that it says on it is a little different from what it is, but that may be due to external factors. Anyway, so I'd say Marineland Stealth, one of my favorite heaters in general. The only thing is they don't have an indicator light. That's really the
An
only
indicator light
to show that
to
it's
telling
on
you
or
that
show
it's
that it's heating or
heating.
anything. There's no indicator light at all for
So you don't know
nothing.
if it's working until the water gets hotter.
Right. But the Marineland Stealth Pro is the new one, and it's easy to see the light. It's got a green light when the temperature is at or above what you set it to, and it's got a red light on when it's heating, and when it's unplugged, the light's not on. So it's always on. Now, it's still got the advantage of it's being black and it sort of fades into the background except the little light, but it's either green or red, and I like it. It seems to be accurate, good heater. As far as I can tell, I've used. I have two of them that I've used, and they seem to be really nice. I know that there was a scare early when in their production. Some of them were blowing up or something like that. This is all what I've heard. No personal experience with exploding heaters of this kind, but I've heard that they had a recall or something like that. But mine have been fine. I like the Hydor brand. I've got the traditional tube heater. That's a high door that works really nicely. It's nice and small, but it's a compact size, but it does a lot of heating for its size. I've got another one. I think it's a Jaeger. It used to be Abel Jaeger, something like that. It's not fully submersible, so that's a pain. Other than that, it's pretty good, but
Now,
I hate heaters that are not
how,
fully submersible.
why do they even make an aquarium heater that isn't, all of it is not made to get wet? Because that just seems like
Stupid.
somebody was missing a few brain cells at work that day.
I don't know. For a long time, the only heaters you could get hung on the side of the tank, and the tube went straight down into the tank, and you hung this little thing over it, and you screwed it onto the side and hooked it on that way, and you had to adjust it outside of the water. And the water level line was very touchy. You couldn't go below it, but you couldn't go a whole lot above
it
either.
That would make water changes difficult.
It was extremely annoying. Yeah, you had to unplug your heater every time you did a water change, and then you had to make sure that the heater was calibrated afterwards. Ugh, hated that. And so my personal feeling with a heater is get one that's fully submersible, and make sure it is, because some of them will say submersible on it, on the box, and then you get it home and open it up, and in the fine print it says, this heater's not fully submersible, so what the heck was that? I don't know. Didn't like that. But the Marineland heaters are fully submersible, the Visitherm and the Top Fins, those are all fully submersible at least. Now, the Hydor Minis are good in some ways. These are the ones, those little flat heaters. They're a little flat, covered in some kind of plastic, and they don't have thermostats or anything. The basic idea is to put them in teeny tanks like Forbetas. There's supposed to be one that's good for, I think, 2 to 5 gallons, or is it 1 to 3? I don't remember. And then the one that goes up to 10 gallons, and I have 2 of the smaller ones and 1 of the larger ones. It's annoying that they don't have a thermostat, and they're only really good to heat because they don't heat much. They're only really good to heat if the environment where you keep the fish is slightly too cool and stably too cool. So if you have a house where it's, for example, always 72 degrees, you could get one of those and your water would probably be about 75. But if you have
it's just when you need a little nudge.
Just a teeny nudge in a small tank like a bowl or you know, a 2 gallon tank or 2.5 gallon tank or something, and you want to warm the water a little bit, but it's not really going to keep the water at a stable temperature. It's just going to warm it incrementally a certain amount. So if the tank, you know, your heater, your furnace breaks in your house and the temperature goes down to 52, it's only going to be, you know, 56 degrees in that tank, so it's not a whole lot of help. So, I don't know.
Could you use it with another heater if you need to?
I guess you could, but if you have another heater, then
why bother?
Yeah, I don't know. So, you know, it has a certain niche market, I guess. If you have a well climatically controlled house and you just need your water a teeny bit warmer, then that could work. And I've used them in applications that help. I lent one to some folks we know who had a beta that was just acting too cold, and they put that in and he would go sit on it. And it was better than nothing, but I don't think it was enough. I don't think it was enough, but it was something. So let's talk briefly about some heat and other tank disasters. For example, what happens if your heater gets too hot? Well, this is one of those things that's just best avoided, but you can do a few things about it. But let's talk about how to avoid it first. One thing is to get 2 small heaters instead of 1 big one. If you figure out that you need, you know, you look at the store and this says this tank heats up to, I mean, this heater heats up to 20 gallons, and you have a 20-gallon tank, you could get 2 heaters rated for 10 gallons. And then they'll both keep the water warm enough, but if one of them sticks on, it's not likely to get really hot. It might go up to, you know, 86 instead of 82 where you want it, but it's not going to go up to 97 and cook your fish. Also, I would highly recommend when you get a heater, put it in the tank before you get any fish with the water and calibrate it for a couple of days, watching the thermometer and adjusting it so you know that it's dependably keeping it at the temperature you want it to. Once you've done that, then you can start adding the fish to cycle it. That, because usually, you know, 90% of the heater problems are right at the beginning. So I would say take care of that. And if it is a problem, you can take it back. If there's a problem with the heater, you still have the packaging. If you wait 6 months, you know, you're not going to have the packaging. So take care of the problems before they start by doing things like that. If the heater does run too hot, you might just want to unplug it, let it sit for a while, and restart. Because a lot of the heaters seem to find whatever water temperature it is and try to warm it a certain amount above that, and if you just keep adjusting it, sometimes it causes problems, so it's better if you unplug it and start over. But talking about high temps in your tank, which might be caused by heaters and might be caused by other problems, once we had a fun one, what happened to us?
Which time?
In Hawaii. Remember what happened when our house got really super hot?
Oh, okay. This was an apartment disaster as well. I was getting up in the middle of the night to go downstairs and use the necessary, and I stepped off the stairs into 2 or 3 inches of water all over the floor. And the toilet tank had flooded the whole downstairs of our apartment in about 2 inches of water. And so the cleanup crews came, and Hawaii, it's really hard to get things to dry out just even normally. And so try to dry out the walls and the carpet and everything
So
of
they
the
wouldn't get be
apartment.
inundated with mold.
Right. Not that they weren't already. They brought in these huge, the industrial kind of blowers that would blow hot air all over the floor
Well, they
and the
had the blowers,
walls.
but they also
The
had a
blowers and a
dehumidifier.
dehumidifier, and so it was supposed to be on for what, 3 days?
It was 3 days,
It was 3 days these were
constantly
on.
on, a huge loud noise, and it was 99
Hot.
degrees in the house.
Hot, hot, hot.
99 degrees in the house.
In the house.
So you can
And
imagine.
it wasn't even just like it was hot wind everywhere you went because it was blowing this all over the place. It was
Was like
kind of
living.
like living in a dust storm in the Sahara or
Or a
something.
food
A
dehydrator.
food dehydrator. It was like living in a food dehydrator. It was
It was
terrible.
miserable. But you can imagine the fish, okay? Dehumidifier in the house, and the fish tanks would lose inches of water every day, and I'm not joking.
Was terrible.
Inches of water every day, and the water temperature was incredible. So I was constantly taking ice from our freezer and putting it in the fish tanks to keep the fish from cooking. And aiming fans toward the surface of the water. Those are the two best things you can do, depending on how hot it is. But a little bit of ice can go a long way in keeping things cool, and fans on the surface of the water. And amazingly enough, we didn't lose a single fish, even though I had some somewhat sensitive fish like coolie loaches, who usually don't like really warm water. Didn't lose a single fish that whole time. So it can help a lot. Okay, well, we may have to talk about some more tank disasters and how to prevent and or correct them next time, because we've got to go, folks. So thank you, Robert from Texas. Thank
Do
you,
you want to
our
get Cosmo
anonymous,
saying
and
goodbye? He's purring on there. See if they can hear
okay.
Cosmo purr.
I bet they can hear that.
That's our kitty boy. He
That's our
says bye
cat.
to you too.
Okay, so thanks for joining us. Please do give us a call in the future, all of you,
And thanks for
all at the
calling
same
in.
time. Yeah, thank you for calling in, and we'll see you next time when we'll talk more about some tank disasters. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.